This is a podcast from the British Council's Going Global 2013.
About 25 years in media companies, 10 of them at the BBC in London. But I've also spent 30 years in various ways engaging with universities, from doing a PhD to being an external examiner to being a chairman of a university. And now I'm setting up, on behalf of the UK government, the National Centre for UK government, the English government, but also on behalf of the Scottish, Welsh and Irish and Northern Ireland governments, the National Centre for Universities and Business. So we're very much looking to bring together business and universities. I'm very passionate about the idea that university inventiveness in all its forms, the kind of restless pursuit of knowledge for its own sake, the development of young talent for its own sake, has profound business and economic benefits. Although I would say that the starting point is always academic rigor, the starting point is always the development of graduates, but it does have profound economic impact. And how we engage with industry and the world-class collaboration between business and companies and universities seems to me one of our pressing issues in a going global environment and in the context of a knowledge-based economy. So we've got four very interesting and quite different takes on how to achieve that. The UK has been at this now for, I would say, a good 10 years, and I think we've made as many mistakes as we've had successes, but the successes have been quite considerable. I'm going to have reflections on that from Richard Davis. We also have Dr. Gregory Macrides talking about the university industry relation in Cyprus. We have Professor Sedik Abdel Salam Twafiq talking about Egypt and technology transfer. And then finally, from the National Confederation of Brazilian Industry, we have Dr. Rolando Vargas Valichos talking about the Brazilian story. So I'm not going to introduce them all individually. I'm just going to let them come up and do their presentations. And then we'll pick up with you in conversation afterwards. So first of all, would you welcome Professor Richard Davis from Swansea University. Thank you.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I am talking about a major project that we've been working on, and I notice the graphics have not come up. We've been working on for 8 years, which started in 2005, but the building program is just now beginning. So this is the computerized design for a brand new campus on a 40-hectare site right by a beach looking across the sea, across the Swansea Bay. It's a project which will include multinational companies, and the initial investors and initial companies involved in this site you can see there, being BP, Rolls-Royce, and Tata, steel. It also has the backing of Prince Charles's Foundation for the Built Environment, and the architect for the scheme was appointed by Prince Charles. But I want to take a step back, go back 8 years to where we started. We, on our main campus, had run out of space. We're a university that was established by industry 90 years ago, and we've always worked closely with major companies. And we wanted to be able to work more closely with them and develop science park facilities. But we had run out of space at our main campus. So we started talking to the multinational companies with whom we work and asked them a very simple question. Well, what do you want? And what would convince you to locate some of your developments with us? Could we say to convince you you ought to move alongside us with some of your R&D facilities? The answers were, number one, we want world-leading research. We don't want the research and engineering that any competent engineer can do. We employ plenty of those. We want world-leading research that can solve the problems we can't solve in our company. We also want, and this surprised me a little bit, Equally important, we want access to students. We want to be able to have placements. We want to do, help with courses. We want to advise on curricula. We are very worried about the scientists and engineers coming into business. There is not enough of them in the UK, and that's true of many countries. The second point, scale. They said, you must be big. There's no point us having a long-term agreement with a small university. We want robust universities. We want robust departments. We don't want departments of just one leader. They move on and everything collapses. We want lots of scale. We want robustness. Thirdly, we want a senior management, a governing body that is committed to this. Too often we get involved with universities, a few academics, but there is not the commitment at the top. So the answer was, yes, if you meet those conditions, we certainly want closer collaboration activity on R&D and teaching. So we had found a very exciting opportunity, but how were we going to deliver it? Well, we had a number of problems. The first problem was we had to be strategic as a university. And in the UK, this has been hampered over the years by different funding schemes from government. And because it is, we don't just have one government, we have a Welsh government, a UK government, and a European government, all handing out money for different projects. Money is broken up into small pots. Each pot has got special requirements that have to be met. So in a sense, it removes the ability of universities to use sometimes quite substantial total sums to use that money strategically. And however well-intentioned all these funders are, and they certainly are well-intentioned, the result was less than the sum of the parts, and has been for some years, in my view. And you can see there the sort of things that we all do with industry. We provide skilled graduates, skilled postgraduates, promote entrepreneurship, undertake collaborative research, support existing companies and businesses, we license IP, we spin out new companies to exploit university IP. And in the UK, there were different bits of money for every one of these things. Nothing coordinated. We had to adopt a strategic approach, and we like to move fast as a university. We couldn't wait for government to change the way they operated. So we started operating strategically and organizing ourselves within the university so that we could attract and anchor companies, large companies of the type that I was talking about, to Swansea, and we could help build up high-tech clusters by supporting small SMEs and spinning out companies ourselves. That was our strategy, and we wanted to create thousands of jobs. We thought, you'll know we're a successful university if we begin to look even a fraction of MIT in terms of the expanses of industry around us. That's what we wanted to deliver. So we became a proactive engine for the knowledge economy. We took on jobs that are not really part of a vice-chancellor's job or part of a university's job, but we've enjoyed doing it. The second problem is that, and I'm sorry this is rather a busy slide, but I'm not going to talk it all the way through. The key point is here that the commercialization of knowledge from universities is traditionally seen as a linear operation through basic research, through to applied research, through to development, through to the, whatever it is you sell in the market, to commercialization. And traditionally, we've been encouraged in the UK to work in the basic and some applied research. And then everything passes on. Then the job passes on to industry for the latter stages. Of course, real life isn't like that. Real life is not like that at all. That as soon as you start moving beyond applied research into development, scaling up the processes, being able to have large production, hitting problems in consumer tests, or if it's medical, in clinical trials, you want the academics there who did some of the original development so that you can reiterate. So the point is, commercialization has to be an iterative process, not a linear process. If universities are to engage properly, we have to engage further down this process. We have to be ready to move right down this process. We wouldn't be concentrating down here, but we need to be alongside some of the R&D people in industry along that stage, through those stages. And that is what we started doing, and that will be one of the challenges, exciting challenges, on this new campus. Problem three, we have to drive culture change within the university. And here we all know the issues that senior managers and vice chancellors have very little command and control in any university. Our job is to win hearts and minds. So we have to create an environment where academics, world-leading academics doing major research, are willing to engage further down the chain. However, that has proved to be much easier than we thought, because they immediately see the rewards. Because when they start spotting difficult scientific problems further down the chain, then they start getting more research grants to solve those problems as well, and more money from industry to do that. So I think we're winning on that one. So the outcome is that we have changed the way we operate in a university. We think about some of the key academic areas in the university, like engineering, medicine here, like computer science and telecoms. We think of them as supporting clusters, of high-tech clusters. And we have a school of business, which we're increasingly now, as part of our strategy, orientating towards supporting work in technology and technology transfer. And the final point of this is where I started. The work has begun on this campus. It's not easy in a time of recession to find the money. The total cost here is about 300 million euros. It's approaching $400 million in one contract to build this, which we've recently signed, involving student residences, the engineering block, some of the largest and most modern engineering facilities available in any university in Europe, according to the funders. We also have a large hall and lecture theatres, which have been donated by BP as part of their legacy. They gave us this land. The land has all been donated to the university. You can see the beach along here. And in autumn of 2015, when we open, you can come and see the students playing beach football and beach volleyball and so on the beach. And they only have to go a few miles to surf as well. So this isn't quite California, because the water temperature is a little bit cooler, but it's a grand place for surfers as long as they wear wetsuits. And we also have a major facility here for the business school, which will also be linked in. We've got here, which you can't see on this particular slide, we've got a major facility of the Rolls-Royce that Rolls-Royce has established with us in testing materials. We do a lot of the interior development of materials for Rolls-Royce aero engines. And the testing facilities for those materials will be on this site. Tata have got a major development on coatings of steel, which we've developed, which got photovoltaic properties. But they're not photovoltaics and can be produced just by printing and coating through the steel plant, which we think is going to have a transformational effect. The research laboratories for Tata and the scaling up plant to test the methodology on production lines in steel companies is on one corner of the campus. We've also just had money from the UK government for an energy safety research institute in collaboration with universities in Texas, where obviously is a center of energy safety interests. But we'll be considering everything there from the chemical engineering and from oil and petrochemicals through to fracking, through to alternative sources of energy in that scheme. And we were very pleased to win a very substantial amount of money from the UK government last September for it. Where does all this money come from? The European Investment Bank have lent us £60 million, £75 million euros. And that is very important to us because, of course, in the time of recession, the banks are not giving universities or lending universities large sums of money. The European Investment Bank has advised the European Commission that this is the best project they've seen led by a university in the whole of Europe. And the European Investment Bank is there to support economic regeneration. And we look on that as quite an accolade that they think this is so important. As a result of that, for the first time ever, the European Commission has given the money to the European Investment Bank for the loan, to cover the loan. So we've got a very, very low rate of interest for a long period because the money has come from the European Union. We have a gift from the structural funds in the European Union. I think that's around £35 million. It was about 45 million euros. A large amount of money, which I can't tell you exactly how much it is, and I'm not supposed to tell you how much it is, from BP for developments on the campus. A substantial sum of money from the Welsh Government, a substantial sum of money I mentioned from the UK Government, and of course the university is investing a bit itself, but other companies don't like putting capital in on the whole. One of the greatest difficulties is to get capital out of private companies. BP is the exception. BP has been most generous, but other companies are willing to sign contracts in terms of research collaboration consultancy work, which provide us with an income stream into the future, which helps to underwrite the loan. And the final bit of the funding comes for the student residences, which comes from a pension fund, a prudential pension fund, which underpins the cost of the student residences. So we are feeling very excited about this. I'm personally feeling excited to be able to talk about it. When you've been working on a project for 8 years, but it is just a project, it is just a vision, people begin to wonder, well, will it ever happen? It is happening. You can come to Swansea and you can see the earth movements that have already started and the foundations going in. So it's moving ahead fast. We will judge how well it's done by three things: the growth of research activity in the university, our ability to attract more money from industry because of working closely with them, the improvements in employability for our students, because we are particularly keen on the ability for our students in the future now to work more closely with some of these companies, and the companies are looking for the best, and they want to design postgraduate courses in particular with industry. And finally, because I said we wanted to be proactive in developing a knowledge economy, it's not part of our job, but nevertheless, we will measure our success as well by how many new well-paid jobs are created over the next 20 years in this part of Wales. Thank you very much indeed for listening.
Richard, I absolutely love your chutzpah in claiming a beach in Swansea in front of representatives from Brazil, Cyprus, and Egypt. Those of you who have been to Swansea, lovely city, blooming cold. Richard, just whilst Gregory's getting ready, I've been very conscious coming back into the sector after having been away for a while that there has been a big culture change amongst academics about the relationships with industry over the past 10 years. Am I right about that? And what do you think has produced that change in culture amongst academics?
I actually think this is more complicated because many academics will never get involved in industry and never get involved in commercialization. And we don't necessarily want them to. So it's the development of a strong and important minority that's making the difference.
Yeah.
I think we are probably well up on the curve there because we happen to be a university with a lot of engineering. Our strongest area is science and engineering. So there's a lot of enthusiasm for that already. We've been working with large multinational companies since we were founded 90 years ago. So there was a bit of a tradition. But nevertheless, people had expected to step away as soon as the idea had been taken by industry. And as I was saying in the talk, it doesn't take long for people to realize that if they keep talking to industry, then they get more research grants to help on all the additional problems that occur during the later stages, the valley of death, or whatever, however you want to describe different areas have different terminology for this.
all the whole deficit in the commercialization process.
So that's an important consideration. So you think there's a minority of academics who are going to engage with this, and it's protecting, it's defending and developing them. That's the crucial thing. So maybe we'll come back to that. Greg, I'm going to pass to you to talk about Cyprus.
Before I begin, allow me to make a comment about the
cold, of course,
about the cold waters. Maybe he's not listening. He has to listen to this.
There seems to be a technical malfunction here.
Okay, just a quick comment about an innovative idea for the cold waters, Mr. Vice Chancellor.
Hang on, Richard's feeding back.
Hello, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm making a comment about the cold waters that you were worried about. There is an idea that you can make an artificial little gulf there and use solar energy to heat up the that little area and have a warm waters anytime during the year. So you have an innovative idea also next to your innovative campus.
We're a bit short of solar energy but as well.
Well, you can use as much as possible, I suppose.
Not in Cyprus.
Well, you get some sun sometimes. Okay, I'm going to present to you a project which is in progress. It's a project funded by the known structural funds, the European social funds. It started actually in the beginning of 2010 and is expected to be completed by the beginning of 2015. We base everything on Innovation Union and the priorities set by the European Commission, and this is based on how the project is developed. Let me just say what are the goals. Is the development and operation of industry liaison officers in the six universities that are operating in Cyprus. Of course, this is also a project that for the first time is bringing together cooperation between public and private universities. In 2010, there were only six, now there are eight. But in this project, we have three public and three private universities cooperating. This was one of the challenges also in order to avoid competing each other in getting this funding, so we developed a consortium, so we together, all together, managed to get the project. Of course, one of the problems in Cyprus with the enterprises is that there is no research culture, so part of this project is to develop the research culture within the enterprises. And, of course, on the other hand, the academics had to start developing their research in such a way that can be understood by enterprises. So the challenges there were to make sure the two sides are communicating. We had to convince the researchers to be able to develop profiles that are not usual, too scientific, that in the way they submit to journals, but they have to communicate science and their research and innovation in the way that can be understood by businessmen. On the other hand, we had to convince the business people to understand why they need to invest in research, and how they can, of course, utilize the academic innovation and make it into products. So we had to establish a communication channel between all the stakeholders, of course, including the Chamber of Commerce and other industry authorities. Um, The key priorities, of course, were to ensure benefits to business and industry through academic research, maximize opportunities and employment potential for students. So one of the main deliverables of this project is to establish placements for university students into the enterprises as part of their program of study. Of course, not all the programs of study in the universities include an integrated practicum in enterprises, but usually this is done over the summer. So some programs may or may not include such placements. So the main goal of this project is to deliver by the end of 2014 400 placements as a minimum. So I have some numbers that we managed to do at the moment. And of course, some of the behind all this process of developing the placements, we expect that there is a development of communication as far as research. So we expect development of agreements, and we had to develop models and templates of agreements that are expected to be signed between academia and industry. All this is developed through tender procedures with private companies and experts. All this is tested at the moment and is under improvement. And I will tell you what is our step in a few moments, the next step. So through student placements and internships, we expect exploitation of universities' research results by Cypriot businesses, communicating and commercializing academic research results, and encourage research in the Cyprus business society. The completed works, I think I mentioned most of them already, we are in the stage of communicating through a meeting between researchers, students, and industry, meetings that take place every 2 months. And we're trying to communicate and build clusters of cooperation. And at the moment, we develop different profiles of the researchers in each university, the students' profiles, the companies' profiles, and of course, the infrastructure profiles in the sense of laboratories. So there are laboratories that are used by academics, but they have to be developed and made available so that they can be used by industry under cooperation projects. So all this is coded at the moment, and besides the other parts as far as quality assurance and et cetera, that is embedded in every process. We just started the final stage of the project, which is the development of a portal. And this portal will upload all the profiles and will have different features. One main feature is to do matchings between the student profile and the enterprise, so that the system can give us an initial list where each student can be placed. Of course, there will be access to enterprises who will be able to search with keywords of what they are looking for. And of course, they will also be able to use keywords to search about research related to their business, so they can see what which academic is working to the area that they are doing business with. The whole portal and the whole system, of course, is developed in bilingual. It's developed in Greek and in English. So even though the project is supposed to be developed to support the Cyprus environment, and as a small country, of course, we managed to do this as a national project and not a regional. So Cyprus, as you know, is 800,000 people. So you can imagine the same model that operates in Cyprus could easily become a model of operation in a region of a bigger country. So anyway, all the tools are developed in Greek and English. So we expect that after the completion of this project, we are aiming into two things. One would be to find another project that will keep us together for the period of 2014 up to 2020, and this will enable us to keep sharing the system instead of splitting the system into a single system for each university. And of course, the infrastructure and the tools that are developed are expected to open up to the outside world so that the universities and the researchers will have opportunities to work with industry outside Cyprus. In Cyprus, we have excellent researchers, and this can be seen by the different statistics and rankings of the European Union, with very high success in the ERC funding schemes and, of course, in other programs, funding programs. But the industry may not be that ready to accept and utilize all the innovation that is coming out. Of course, with the recent developments and future developments of Cyprus in the region, and with our luck to have this new gas and petrol coming out in a few years, we expect to see large investments in Cyprus and establishments as far as industry, and this can utilize the research capability and the high quality of students and researchers in the area. Just to give some statistics where we stand, we managed to place about 40 students at the moment. As remember, the goal is 400 by the end of 2014. 62% of the academic profiles are already in place, but now they will become digital. They will be inserted into the portal. 201 enterprises. Of course, there are 8,000 enterprises in Cyprus, but not all of them are of the type that can accept placements of students. 75 research labs profiles are collected at the moment. So the next main step is development of this web portal that will enable us to run everything automatic and, of course, to be ready for the next project. Thank you very much.
Gregory, whilst we wait for Professor Sedic to go up. One of the frustrations that companies often have with universities is around intellectual property, partly because of the MIT model, the assumption that university intellectual property is inherently valuable, and of course companies know how hard it is to take a product or a service to market. And in the UK, a lot of universities are signing up to giving away 95% of their intellectual property for free to companies, and only working on about 5% that they think is valuable. What kind of approach are you taking as you set these offices up to intellectual property?
Part of the process, of course, is to develop internal regulations for each university for supporting the IPR issues, and of course to how the patents are supported. I have to tell you that none of the universities has internal regulation at the moment. The University of Cyprus is putting together its internal regulations in these days. Over the last few years, the patents that were developed were supported in an ad hoc procedure. There are different ways to support patents. At the moment, we support the preliminary stage, which is 1 year registration with 1,000 euro approximately. So this allows some time to the researcher to enter the university to evaluate and decide whether they will support a full patent and in what countries to be supported. So you know that supporting patents and maintaining patents is very expensive. Yeah. But we're looking into a process of supporting patents through an evaluation procedure and using, of course, the patent attorneys, not in Cyprus, but in Europe. And, of course, we know that by 2014, we will have this new European-level IP system. So we expect that within 2014, we'll be able to support patents and maintain them for several years. And then if we do not want to keep supporting them, we will release them to the researchers. But as far as percentages, royalties, etc., this is not finalized yet, but we expect that in 2014, the latest, we will have a clear cut of what the regulations will be. But you should know that these things cannot be fixed. They have to be flexible, because every type of innovation and patent can take different direction as far as percentages, negotiations with investors, etc. So it would be an indicative direction, some minimums, but the system has to be flexible in order to be able to communicate and make the right agreements for business investment.
Okay. Well, you've used two words that chill the blood. One is patent and one is attorney. Keep the lawyers out is always my view. Now we're going to press across to hear about Egypt.
Okay. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Good morning, everybody. In the coming few minutes, I will try to highlight some of the efforts of Alexandria University some of the efforts of Alexandria University for enhancement of university-industry collaboration. As a matter of fact, one of the great challenges facing our country nowadays is the post-revolution economic crisis. And I think one of the solutions for that is reinforcement of the knowledge-based economy by bridging the gap between academia and industry. There are some drivers for Alexandria University to reinforce the university-industry collaboration. The first one is that Alexandria, being the second largest city in Egypt, has got many economic activities. Secondly, there is a high potential for improvement in the knowledge economy indicators as reported by the World Bank. Alexandria is the main port of Egypt. 57% of national port capacity is in Alexandria. 40% of Egyptian industry is located in Alexandria. And there are four industrial zones in Alexandria. And Alexandria University is the second oldest and second largest university in Egypt. The knowledge indicators, as reported by the World Bank, actually are not satisfactory for all of us in Egypt. But still, the main conclusion of these is that the average for Egypt is less than the average of the whole MENA region, which is the first column here. We're not satisfied with that. And I think the universities should lead this economic development and should lead the change for the better, especially after the revolution. What are the Alexandria University enablers? Alexandria University mission states that industry, academia, partnership is one of its priorities. Secondly, the organizational structure or the hierarchy of the higher management of Alexandria University, as well as all the Egyptian state universities, include a vice president for community services, who's actually responsible for the link between university and industry. The What are the possible mechanisms of collaboration between the university and the industry? As a matter of fact, we have the head of the Chamber of Commerce in Alexandria, represented as one of the members of the University Council for Community Services. Secondly, we also, in the Committee for Scientific Research of the university, we have two members from the business community in Alexandria. Thirdly, many of the faculties, and by faculty we mean the schools or colleges, the faculty councils include some members from the business community in their councils. And finally, which is the focus of my speech today, is that we have established in the year 2008 the Technology Transfer and Industry Collaboration Office, or what we call the TICO. How it works, Alexandria University, represented by the TICO, will interact with the business and industry on one side and with the international partners on the other side to come up with solutions for business and industry. How the process works, the interaction between the TICO and the business will come up with the market needs and requirements, which will be transferred by the TICO into the expertise from our staff to come up with the solutions back to the business and so on. What are the objectives of this TICO office? Research and development activities, technology commercialization, training needs assessment, on-job training or professional development training, and marketing promotion for innovative ideas. The key performance indicators, was it a success or not? After 5 years of its establishment, it's about time to see the key indicators for that office and whether or not it has achieved its goals or not. Firstly, TICO has been successful in providing grants for funding of a number of projects that help solving industrial problems. Also, TICO has expanded its geographic scope beyond the boundaries of Alexandria to a kind of a nationwide activity. Here are some, this table actually shows some of the examples of academia industry collaboration, and I will focus only on three schools. The School of Engineering, which actually got the major part of this involvement, and one of the projects, which is actually a major project, is actually the development of 5 ports in Egypt. The main one is the Alexandria port, which is the largest, and actually it has been totally changed from an old-fashioned port into a new state-of-the-art port by the help of the School of Engineering. Also, urban planning of the cities of Alexandria, Marsa Matruh and Damanhur, was done by the help of the expertise in the School of Engineering. Other projects, like in the School of Agriculture, we have the rapid detection and removal techniques of pesticide residues from fruits and vegetables, and also the impact of climate change on the Nile Delta and how to solve this problem. In the School of Medicine, we have established the Clinical Trial Center, or the Clinical Research Center, which undergoes the Phase 3 and Phase 4 studies. And many studies are ongoing, and many studies are already done in many important fields, especially for the health of our people in Egypt, We have three projects in breast cancer, colorectal cancer, and cancer-related pain, bipolar disorders, hepatitis, which is a major health problem in Egypt, and also in diabetes and other diseases. These are some examples of the industry or business and university collaboration. Some other indicators of the success story of the TICO is the ongoing projects, technical training of the youth to be qualified for working in food industry, and this is actually funded by an NGO which is called Thawiris Foundation. And also the training based in employment funded by USAID. Some other activities, actually they held two international conferences, one on the research promotion, technology transfers and transfer and business creation, and the other one was about innovation and entrepreneurship for one day. They also held about 25 awareness sessions where the academia meet the industry people and business men from all over the country. This graph actually summarizes what has been said of the different fields of collaboration, especially engineering services and consultation, engineering training, lab testing, and other services provided by the academia into the industry. What is the future, or what about the future of TICO? We actually intend to reinforce the success of this office by more university industry collaboration to overcome the, as I said, the post-revolution economic crisis. More international cooperation is also required in the area, especially in the area of technology transfer, and more involvement of our expert faculty and young researchers to participate in the, in this TICO projects. And finally, we have recently secured about 6 scholarships for some of our promising junior staff to travel abroad to have degrees in the fields of commercialization of research and also in the IRP, or the intellectual property rights, and also in the field of entrepreneurship. Thank you very much.
Cedric, whilst we wait for Rolando to take the platform, in the UK, actually, some universities are closing down their technology transfer departments.
Closing them down,
partly because they get in the way of academics engaging directly with business rather than having an intermediary. And it's partly to do with people in technology transfer parts not really being business-led. You know, they're probably academics who have gone into technology transfer. Are the people in your technology transfer offices coming out of business, or are they coming out of the academic side?
Actually, the people involved in this office are actually from academia.
Right.
And but I've been into the UK, and I've seen some of the universities, and actually it was an invitation by the British Council to see this model. And I was really impressed by what is going on, and most of the universities we visited did have this kind of office. And actually, I'm planning, other than sending some of our junior staff to get degrees, like master's degrees in these fields, right, is to send them on-site, see what is going on, and replicate more or less what is being done.
Yeah.
I've been actually impressed, very impressed by what I've seen in the University of Birmingham.
Yeah.
And especially with its collaboration with Rolls-Royce.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, the the guy who is the liaison for the university and the Rolls-Royce is actually is one of our graduates from Alexandria University. Oh. So we'll try actually to get some help from him to get the know-how of this technology transfer.
I think one of the big,
really a nice model.
Well, one of the big breakthroughs in the UK, I think Richard would agree, is bringing businesses onto campus. I mean, that's actually been, in a way, more powerful, I think, than technology transfer. But we're going to hear from Brazil, and then we'll come back.
Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here representing an institution that we call SENAI. SENAI, its mission is to promote vocational and technological education, innovation, and transfer of industrial technologies, contributing towards increasing competitiveness in the Brazilian industry. It means SENAI was created to support the Brazilian industry. Some figures of SENAI. Last year, we had over 2.5 million enrollments in vocational and technological education courses. Over 82,000 technical advisory services. 200 projects for technological innovation. 48 international partnerships in over 25 countries. Our structure, we have more than 5,500 fixed units, it means schools, more than 300 mobile units, it means trucks and boats, more than 300 laboratories, more than 29,000 employees, and we attend 28 sectors of the industry. We know that Brazil now is classified as economy based on efficiency, but 20 years ago, it was classified as economy based on factors of production. And our challenge, and in a good period of time, is to go to the economy based on capacity for innovation. That's why the Brazilian challenges are induct innovation and technological modernization of the industry, support industrial sectors in the development of products with higher value added, and support research and development with the focus for SMEs. You know that Brazil is considered as a growing country, and last year we were classified as the sixth worldwide economy. Then, for that reason, we designed a program that we are calling SENAI Program for the Brazilian Industrial Competitiveness. But in this moment, we know that we have a lot of problems. We have low level of proficiency of the average Brazilian student. Also, low level of students finishing graduation courses related to production, technology, and construction. SENAI is focusing in innovation for the next years, growing demand for the higher educational level, because SENAI, with the 70 years we had, our main area was vocational training. But the next years, we are preparing to enter also to the higher education, but only where there gaps exist, offer and demand. And the dynamic of the industry occupations profile according on the requirements for competitiveness are variables that we are thinking how to do that big challenge. And we know that we decide that one strategic guidelines is to expand selectively the offer of technological higher education courses, primarily in unmet demands by the market. Then I'm going to summarize the big challenge we have and the project we are developing in this moment. To expand the capacity of innovation in the industries, the challenge is to create 23 innovation institutes as a model as the Fraunhofer Gesellschaft Institute from Germany, and also to implement 61 technology institutes. It means the strategic project we have in that area is to implement the project of Senai Innovation and Technology Institutes. I believe that is the first time in the world that we are going to implement so many institutes in a few years. Another guideline is significantly expand compliance with the industry demand by qualified labor. The major challenge is to duplicate the number of enrollments in vocational and technological education. It means that for the end of the next year, we want to have more than 4 million enrollments. Last year, we had 2.5. In this moment, we have almost 3 million enrollments. How are we doing that? The expansion on fixed and mobile networks, and also developing a national distant education program. And the other one is to develop the core abilities in the industry workers. Then the challenge is to develop pedagogically practices and didactic resources. And the project is continued education oriented towards the labor world. Here I have some maps to show where we are implementing those institutes. These are the innovation institutes, 23 innovation institutes that are located in all over the states of Brazil. In some states, we have 3 or 4. In São Paulo, for example, we are going to have 4. Minas Gerais, 3. And here we have another map to show where is going to be the technological institutes. We don't want to substitute university. No. We are saying that we are going to work together with the universities. Those institutes are going to be the organism that is going to join industry necessities and the competence we have in the universities. Because in Brazil we have a good, great universities, and they are developing also research, applied research for industry. But we must to power it, that engine. And one solution that we find is to develop that institute. Of course, in those institutes, we are going to have scholarships for master and PhD students, but the theme of their works, we are going to define it. We are going to say in which area and what they will develop. For that huge project, we have the partnership of the Fraunhofer Gesellschaft Institute, and also we have the partnerships with MIT, Stanford, and Harvard universities. Okay, thank you.
We have time for a few questions. Just before we kick off, I mean, this is a major, major program of innovation.
Yep.
And it's just worth touching on how your government is able to afford this and how they're funding it.
Yes, the government is involved, and we began with the funding of $1 billion to begin with that project, that it was from the National Bank of Development.
And as I understand it, that if someone gets a gas franchise or an oil franchise in Brazil, 1% of turnover of that company is given over to innovation in Brazil. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
So we wish we'd done that with North Sea Oil in the UK, I can tell you. So questions from the floor over here. Would you mind saying who you are and where you're from?
I'm from Bangladesh. I'm a member of the National Skills Development Council. We are planning to train 20 million workforce skilled people over the next 10 years. And I think the Brazilian model looks very attractive. So is it possible for us to engage with SENAI to sort of replicate your models in Bangladesh, and how can we get that assistance? And my other question is to my Egyptian friend. You know, this linkage with industry, this is something which we want to do also. Whether you could also share your experience through the D8 forum, you know, of the largest OIC countries, whether that's possible. Thank you.
Let's take a few questions and then come back. There's one down here. One down here, the front here. And then there's one over after that. Just take this one first. Again, if you could mind saying where you're from.
Thank you. The project that Professor Richard Davies described, Swansea, is a very good one. But then you limit yourself to just three large companies. Is that strategically being well thought out? Are you open up to many more industry to come, or are those are just the three that you'll be working with?
Okay, we'll part that then. Over here.
Hello. My name is Sara Araujo, and I'm from Colombia, from Colciencias, like the Ministry of Science and Technology of Colombia. My question is for the Brazilian representative. How is the relation with the agencies dedicated to fund research, basic and applied research, such as CNPq, CAPES? How's the relation?
Okay. There's one down here.
Anand Jawad, the University of Moratuwa, Sri Lanka. This question can be from anybody from the panel. When you talked about this technology transfer from the universities, that we need to actually develop technology and transfer for the economic benefit of the country, and how do you really, what kind of partnerships you have with all the other stakeholders, like the government in one side, the industry on the other side, the university on the other side? How do you really make this partnership very strong in one side? And I also heard that technology transfer offices in the UK is being closed down in the universities. Why it is happening? What is the best mechanism to do it? What are the lessons that we have learned in the exercise, and what kind of solutions that we probably have, or alternative mechanism to ensure the objective of technologies being developed in the university are effectively transferred to the industry? Thank you.
Okay, that's four very good questions. Richard, do you want to start with why three and how you move forward?
Yes. I gave the example of the three because they've been heavily involved in the funding and of the campus. There are a long list of companies who are involved in different ways, and they're mostly companies that I'm not able now to tell you who they are. They want to be confidential because this campus won't be ready for 2.5 years.
That's a long time scale for most companies, and they will announce in due course that they will be investing in various ways. I just showed phase one. Phase two is already being planned with a considerable number of IT companies involved in the next phase. And what we found, now that the funding's there and the building has started, we're getting approaches from companies that we have never worked with. We have only talked to companies with whom we work up to now. Suddenly it's changing. So there is a bandwagon effect, I think. And I just want to emphasize, this is about intermingling activity.
Yeah.
So we are not tightly managing IP. Yeah. I mean, IP is where most of us lose money.
Yeah.
Licensing IP is usually a loss. Very few universities make a profit from it. It's the big sums are for skills training and for collaborative research.
Yeah. Very good. Specific questions on partnership and agencies?
We are totally integrated with CAPES and CMPK. You know that Brazil have another huge program that we call Science Without Borders, that the idea is to send 100,000 students to the best universities of the world. 6,000 of that scholarships are dedicated for those institutes. The idea is 5,000 are going to be selected by people that already work at the industry, and 1,000 is going to be by SENAI people that we are going to work in those institutes. About the how can other universities participate in that huge project, we are open because I believe that we are going to have success when we involve more competencies. The way we are working to work is like collaborative networks. It means we are constructing a huge knowledge-based system to identify where we have competencies in Brazil and in all other over the world. Because the idea is when some problem industry appears and we want to study about that, giving a solution, which will be the actors that we must to involve to work to have a better solution, to contract a better solution. That's a huge project that we are preparing. It is a knowledge-based system. Then I invite you, everyone that want to accomplish this big project is invited to be in contact with me or with SENAI, and we want your help also.
And a specific question on DA?
Yes, for our friend from Bangladesh. Actually, you're more than welcome to come and visit for some time and see what is going on. And actually, recently we have done a consortium of similar offices like TIKU in major Egyptian universities for exchange of ideas and actually for more collaboration between these offices together on the national arena. So whenever you would like to come and visit and see how it works, you are more than welcome.
We're almost out of time. I wouldn't overstress my technology transfer point. I mean, I think that in the UK there's a journey going on and people are learning all the time about different ways of doing it. But Rich has made the big key point, which is the journey started with the MIT model, which is tech transfer and patent protection. And frankly, that costs more money than it's worth most of the time. Greg, I'm going to give you the last word. You're on a journey as well. And this question about how do you strengthen partnerships? I was very struck by something you're doing that we want to do, which is to create a portal and get everyone onto it and basically get academics to talk, in our case, English. And how is that? Do you think the internet is a transformative technology in developing these partnerships?
Well, the internet will support the make easy communication and also develop databases that would be easily accessible, and so the offices can operate in a faster and more effective way. But of course, in order to be successful, you have to really involve all the possible stakeholders in the process. That's why, as I said, every 2 months we organize meetings where we invite the Chamber of Commerce, the Federation of Industries, the bank networks, the researchers, the students, etc. One of the key points here is that there are different, and problems, of course, is that there are different perceptions between students and enterprises. And it was said yesterday that skills, students coming out from the university with skills is very important. And nowadays, many universities do not produce graduates with skills. They produce graduates with knowledge. Knowledge is not a priority anymore for many enterprises, but it's skills. And students, and through a recent survey that was done by IBM, I don't know if it's published yet, but I saw the result, that the perception of the students as far as whether the skills are necessary in order to be employed or is very low. And the reason is because they don't know what skills are. They only have knowledge. So knowledge is not a priority anymore in the sense that if you have it and you don't know how to use it, it's more or less useless for enterprises, in the sense that knowledge nowadays is easily accessible. If you ask me a question and give me 10 seconds, I can go through the internet and get you the answer. But if you ask me how to use the knowledge, then I don't know unless I have the skills. So skills development is very, very important, and this is the challenge for many universities and programs to develop the skills. And of course, skills also is not enough. What is the next thing? You have to have passion, you have to have curiosity, you have to have fantasy, you have to have vision. Huh? So in order to be creative and to have produce innovation. So you have knowledge, you have skills, and then you need curiosity and passion. So all this, if the universities manage to adapt and to restructure and to redesign their programs to include all these in cooperation with enterprises, then we will have all a better future and better people to be in the different businesses and to, of course, man centers like the one they are developing here that they want to really be ahead. And, of course, the suggestion that the IPR issues may be not so useful as probably only 10% of the patents are really ending up with investment. It's this approach is probably going to be the solution.
Yeah.
But the solution has to be done by the universities, really.
Another question.
I'm going to have to wind up. I think you have to ask questions later. Okay. Thank you all for coming. I started by saying that businesses rely on talent and innovation. These are great stories about how to develop talent and innovation, and I'd like to thank all of our panelists. Thank you.
This is a podcast from the British Council's Going Global 2013.